kids and everything. Do you mind going over your post-career medical conditions again for me?
Well, I've had several injuries since my retirement. You know, I've had problems like with my knee. I had a very serious knee injury in college, and it's, I was getting ready to be drafted. I was having an awesome year, and I remember I almost had a 300-yard gain, and I was playing hurt, and I ended up getting hurt, and I had to have major knee surgery. So I've always had a problem with my knee when I got into the pros. And being that you know, playing in the NFL for 13 years, you're going to accumulate certain injuries and everything. And certainly I've had a few, but, nothing major. And what's shocking to me is that after my, you know, career, my playing days are over, I've had several surgeries. And this year alone, I've had three major surgeries that I didn't really contemplate. But I've had, a major neck surgery in 2007. And that was actually led to my retirement when I finally had to retire because I had a couple of episodes in practice and in games where I went paralyzed. And I have spinal stenosis, and I had a very serious narrowing of my spinal column where it was almost completely closed. So I would get hit or I'd hit somebody. I could bump up into a little 13-year-old kid playing a pickup basketball game, and I'd get this jolt through my body. And I remember visiting one of my teammates, Bruce Harper, and I was in a rush to get back to my car, and I missed the step, and I jolted my neck, and you get this, like, shock, like, paralysis. And it was very scary and very painful. So I finally had to get the surgery, which I was very scared about. And I've since had 14 screws put in, 14 screws and a couple of plates and a cage put in. And then this year alone, in January, I had my shoulder operated on. I had a torn labrum and rotator cuff. But previous to that, after my retirement, because I've always had problems with my right shoulder, I had that totally constructed. But I was falling down a lot, and I didn't really put those things together. And I've had a back condition, and that started in 1986, because I'm then treated by an Arnold Schwartz, who's wonderful. And I've had problems since 86, and who knows, when he played this game, there may have been a cumulative things that are going on that you just didn't realize at the time. Sure. But I remember they thought I had like a pulled hamstring. They were treating it, and I had this radiation down my leg, and not knowing I had the same stuff going on in my back with the stenosis and everything and a bulging disc. And I finally had to get operated finally this year. And my doctors always said, you'll know when you have to get it because you just can't take it anymore. So I was falling down. And I ended up, I had pain in my other shoulder, but I fell a couple of times where I'd pull a branch off of a tree doing landscaping. I just had this pain, not knowing I had tore my labrum and my rotator cuff, so I had that repaired in January. And I'm thinking I'm going to go back to teaching because I'm a phys ed teacher, and I'm thinking I'm going to get this surgery, and I'm coming back. It was over the holiday, Martin Luther King holiday, and I'm thinking I'm coming back that following Tuesday. And everybody thought I was, like, nuts. And so it was very painful. I couldn't recover. And during this time, I was contemplating getting the back surgery. I went into special surgery with the doctor, and I had to go in through this painful, painful myelogram where they shoot this dye inside your back, and I thought I was going to die. They had to give me so much painkiller, they had to stop because I was in so much pain. I thought I was going to have a heart attack or something, but I never want to go through this again. So I finally decided, because I was really having some reservations with my doctor, per se, not because he didn't do a great job, is that I had residual things that have happened to me since the surgery with the nerve damage. And so with this back thing, it's very serious, and I was very scared. So I went into New York and had testing and just trying to make a decision. I finally decided to go with my doctor, and who was very good, and I'm glad I did it because I'm much better than what I was. And so I've since had, you know, 10 screws and 2 rods put in there, you know. So, and then I was at an appearance thing, and I tried to jump out of the way to get out of the way and land it wrong. And I've always had problems with my Achilles, tendonitis, and I used to have to wear these special orthotics and boots and stuff. And I tore my Achilles in December, so it's been pretty, like, rough. And for the first time, it's been a year and 3 months since my back, I can honestly say that I'm starting to feel a little bit better than what I was, because there was a time where it was so painful, I didn't want to get out of bed. and this is honest to God truth. My daily routine would be to get up in the morning, take 2 to 4 pain pills with an orange soda, take a shower, and get back into bed. And I never slept. And you know, I would get 3 hours at a clip with Ambien. And I knew on the long term that wasn't going to be good. And my girlfriend would always be fighting with me. You know, it's not like I was addicted, but you just want the stuff to go away. And you just kind of manage your pain, whether it's, you know, going out and having cocktails or whatever just to pass the time. And you just get oblivious to everything. But it's just gotten to the point where now I know from a health standpoint that wasn't going to be good for the long term. So I don't take anything anymore. I still don't sleep. And there are certain days I wish I had them pain meds and I had the sleeping Ambien, because it's nothing worse than when you sit up there and you're staring at the ceiling, you can't go to sleep, but it's like insomnia. And I don't know what has caused that. And, ever since I had my neck surgery, that's been my daily routine. But I'm finally starting to get better with walking, because there was a point where I would sit after the surgery and I'd go to a movie, or I sit too long, or I'm at a bar and restaurant and I can't even get out of my chair. The kids would be going out to the theater and I'm still trying to get out of my chair. So that's starting. It's been 1 year and 3 months now and it's starting to get better. And I called my doctor just recently just to let him know that finally I think I'm starting to hit that wall where I can start feeling somewhat on the normal path, you know. But it's been something that I've been thinking about, especially when you think about young kids who play this game, and you just want people to know, or at least get the information out there with the possibilities of what can occur, you know, especially when you play this game and after your career. And I just hope that one day the NFL will try to organize a healthcare program for guys that are really struggling with these injuries, because it's inevitable. You're going to get hurt. And after your career is over, you're kind of on your own. So that's what I'm hoping one day that take place for athletes in the future.
Now, I know during your last year you said that you were feeling numbness in your extremities and pain.
Yes,
and
I still have that. Yep.
And they were encouraging you. I think the quote you said was a 50% Wesley Walker is better than the guy behind you.
Yeah, well, that's what the trainer used to say, you know, like, and I had that even in college, your backup. And really, and my experience with injuries playing hurt, and that's why I got hurt in college. I was out, wasn't supposed to play. My backup wasn't doing really well, and I went in there, and I ended up getting major knee surgery because you just have this, I don't know, it's not a conceited thing. It's just the athlete inside you, you want to contribute and you want to help your team. And the trainers would always say 50% of your backup is, you know, you're much better than your backup at 100%, and which is a joke, because if anybody's not playing this game at 100%, and once you go into a season, you're not going to be 100% all the time. There's going to be aches and pains or whatever, but you want to be at your best, you know. And when I sit back and look at my career, you just mentioned the numbness and tingling, the nerve damage. I mean, I haven't felt my feet, they're numb since 1986, and that's not going to come back. And I knew that with my back surgery, and I was kind of praying you know, for some reason, you know, after the back surgery, maybe I'd get the feelings back in my feet. But I have numbness and tingling in all my arms and my fingers, and any cold or air conditioner or even a fan that hits me at night, it's painful. And for a long time, even during the summertime, I would sleep under an electric blanket. And it doesn't do well with your relationships, you know, because usually we're on the opposite end. If my girlfriend's cold, I'm hot. If I'm hot, she's cold, you know. So it doesn't bode too well with relationships, especially with the sleeping aspect of it. Because I can watch movies 24/7, but, you know, I'll toss and turn and I keep other people up, and that's not right either. But it puts a strain on your relationship, you know, with this stuff.
Yeah, and the same with your kids, I would assume, you know, it sounds like for a long period of time you, you know, needed assistance from your family to get through these kind of things. And just put a pretty big strain on all of them, I would assume.
Absolutely. And I know at one point in time, my kids would watch me, and they knew you were taking medications, and they see when you're out and, you know, you're out drinking or whatever. And, you know, you were kind of self-medicated, and they only are concerned because they care about you. And I used to have big battles with my girl. Everybody has their own way of thinking and what's best for you, but they're not inside you to know what's really taking place or what's going on, and you try to do the best you can and manage the best you can. And that's the way I've always been. But like I said before, you know, when you have a relationship and the people that really care about you, and it can put a strain on certain things. But I've kind of learned over the years what I have to do. And, you know, and I'm not stupid, but from a health standpoint, what is good for you and what's best for you on the long term. So you look at that type of thing. And I want to try to keep active, but some of these injuries, you just didn't feel good even to even want to jog or run. And that's what I did all my life. And when you've done something for 20 something years and every day, and then when you don't want to do anything, that's kind of bizarre. And I only can relate it to this, friend of mine that I'm taking care of who he'll be 100 in December, and he doesn't really want to do anything now. And I said to him, what kept you active or what made you reach this point in your time? What do you think what you're living? He said, you always got to keep moving. But he doesn't want to move and he don't want to exercise now. But you get to a point where, and I know that feeling, I can relate to him, where your body just does not physically want to do it. And I don't know if it's being lazy. You just don't feel good. And I'll be honest with you, there was a point in time, all I wanted to do was just lay in my bed and watch movies, get up and take a shower. And that was my highlight, to take my pain meds, do my soda in the morning, eat, and hop back in the bed and watch movies. And I could do that 24/7. I would do that for months at a time, you know, and didn't care. And I'm a guy that's very sociable, you know, and I'm very active, you know, and with the social life and girls and everything else. And I remember telling my daughter, I'm like at a place at this club, and I met a friend of mine. I said, Taylor, look at this. This girl is beautiful. I don't even care to go out and do this anymore. You know, there's something wrong with that, you know. You know, but everything is a lot better.
Have you, you know, besides the physical toll it had, on you, it must have had quite the mental toll.
Well, if you let it.
A lot of dark days? Or?
Oh, well, I would get up and, you know, you think about moving around. You just, I couldn't even concentrate. The simple things like getting your bills together. I would have stuff in bags, and then I would go put it in another bag, and I'm like, and I would be at the same place, and then I wouldn't want to do anything. It was very frustrating. Now, I'm actually going in with Bruce Harper and Freeman McNeil. There's a guy, Fred Willis, who's running this neural feedback program to help the brain and to actually do a intake interview to try to, at least it's a observation, and just to try to detect if there's anything there, you know? And I have friends that, you know, memory and they have problems and things that are really happening with them memory-wise. I don't know if it's related to football or your neurocognitive kind of stuff, but we're going in to get evaluated. And this guy's a former football player, and he's trying to help a lot of the NFL retired guys or anyone that needs observation or at least you get a chance to see what's going on and to try to evaluate it and see what's going to progress into something or it's not. And I'm going in Friday with Freeman. I'm actually driving him and meeting Bruce Harper there, and we're all going to take this test and hopefully get a chance to see where we're at.
Now, I think you mentioned before you were pretty lucky that it was workers' comp for a lot of your surgery. Is that correct?
Well, I'm lucky from the standpoint when I filed for my neck and my back. So my surgeries have been taken care of that way and any prescription medications. But I'm thankful that I had my teaching job, which is taking care of the other surgeries that may have needed. And so without that, you know, the guys are struggling. And the NFL, once you retire, you get a COBRA for 2 years and you're out the door and you're on your own. And most insurance companies are not going to insure you.
And so who ends up paying for all these injuries and surgeries and everything else?
Well, it's got to be up to you. If you don't have any insurance, you know, I don't know how guys are going to survive with that, you know, and that's one of the biggest problems there is. And, you know, I don't know what certain guys that don't have insurance or what they're going to do. Either they, you know, they have to deal with these injuries or problems, and because there's no way they're going to be able to pay for any major surgery or any hospitalization. So that's why I'm hoping at one point the NFL will get together with our union or players will stand up to try to create some type of insurance program. Thank God, even since I've retired through my disability, at least I can pay for a health plan and have coverage for myself.
I also did do some research on this topic, and it seems to be that depending on the state you file in, is what kind of benefits you can get when it comes to workers' comp. And
exactly, matter of fact,
players who live in different states are having, you know, aren't eligible to get all
that. Exactly, and because we played in, I think it had something to do with the California law. If you played out of California, you had a chance to file. Me, since I was getting workman's comp payments because of this, I didn't qualify for this big payout or what some of the athletes are getting now, and I know the NFL is trying to stop that. And those payments or lease of opportunities may run out, and I know the NFL is trying to fight that right now. But my understanding was that if you had played out in California at any time that you were able to apply for it. But I'll be honest with you, our union didn't let us know this. We had to, you know, get the information sort of on our own. A lot of people didn't know about it, and that's the fault of our players, and our players are union, to just describe what you're entitled to or what benefits are there for you. And so as a player, you have to really look into the collective bargaining agreement or what you're entitled to, and it takes a lot of research on your part. But I think it's also responsibility of our union to let guys know, because there were certain benefits that I'd end up receiving. And I'll be honest with you, I got this one plan. It was only for a short-term basis for this disability that I had. And I won the award, but I only found out through one of the wives of a player that helped him get this particular award. He had contacted me, and it was through his wife reading the collective bargaining agreement. But you would think that the NFL or the Players Association would let you know, and they just don't do a good job with that. It may be better now, but I'm just talking about during the time I was playing. And I was a union rep, mind you.
Yeah. Oh, wow. What's the main motivating factor, do you think, for the NFL not to be helping the tournament?
The only thing I can say is money. They don't, you know, it's just like any insurance company. They have it regulated where they know the payouts at a certain age and they don't have to pay. And I didn't even know, and I'm just finding this out, because I had taken my pension, which is tied to your beneficiary, and it's not like an insurance plan where you can change your beneficiary. Now, my mother was my beneficiary, and she's in her 80s, and she may pass away. And I can't change that, and because I didn't, you know, if I did it prior to maybe taking my pension, which I didn't know, and then you can kind of change it. But once that's in place and you take your pension, you can't even change your beneficiary. Well, my mom may pass away before I die, and then they don't pay anything, and nobody gets entitled to anything. So there are certain plans that are out there that they have that regulated where they don't have to pay. And the only thing I can say is this: it's about the money. That's a simple fact. They don't want to make these payouts. And that's why this whole concussion lawsuit will probably never end with the pills and everything else. And guys are going to be dying. And I just posted something on Facebook in reference to the settlement being stalled and everything else. And most of these players are going to be dying before they even see anything of a settlement.
Right. Hey, do you feel like that the NFL and the players have a moral obligation to take care of those?
Well,
kind of, like,
for me, knowing the business aspect of it and being an owner and how they would probably think, that is not their responsibility. But I would think with the money that they do make, I think there should be a moral obligation, because they make a ton of money off the backs of these players. But it's also the responsibility of the players to stand up, and the guys are getting paid now a lot better than what they used to. But they should at least stand up to try to create a program or to put pressure on the owners to do something like that and to keep talking about it. And not just because it's the older guys or people before us and things are happening. People don't do things until something happens to them. But they have to get the information. So I would hope, as a unit, as a team, togetherness, and that's what they preach as a family, the teams, the NFL, the players' associates, the players, and the owners, they get together and really try to do the right thing by each other. But unfortunately, this is a business, so that's just the way it is, and it's about the money. But you know that the NFL makes a lot of money, but they'll be the first one to cry poverty, you know? Yeah. And why they don't think about that, you know, that's something that you would have to ask the commissioner or the owners of what their obligation is, or why don't they think of the players in that respect. And they'll probably give you a bullshit answer, because I've seen them dance around Congress and things that they do say, like they're doing all these things for the players, and they really don't. So you'd have to ask them the reason why. And I just wish in all this information that comes out. I just want the fans just to know the truth. And that's the problem that I have with the NFL, and which is even with this concussions and just things that have taken place. Just get the information out there to the public and tell the truth. And for the NFL to try to maintain that they knew nothing about these situations when they did, I think it's a travesty. I just want the NFL, the Players Association, the player, just tell the truth to get the information out there so people are aware of what's happening, you know, because people can make a proper decisions when you're younger, you know, and I know I have children, and I would want them to know the consequences of anything you get into, and this is your decision that you have to make, and you can make it in a proper way. But the NFL will never tell the truth. That's the only thing I'd ask.
Do you feel like you would have, you know, friends who are gone who, you know, maybe with the proper support from the NFL would still be here today?
Wait, what's that again?
I said, do you have, like, friends who are no longer with us from your playing days who maybe would be if they got the proper physical and emotional support?
I'm not
emotional
so sure,
support?
You know, because the people pass away for different reasons. So, you know, I have a good friend of mine I played it with in college, and he played for San Diego. He got drafted by New Orleans, and I thought I was going to go to New Orleans when I got drafted. They actually called before the Jets and said, we're going to start in the second round. We're going to try to get you. And I'd have been first-round draft choice if I didn't get hurt. And, again, injuries hurt you, hurt me money-wise and everything else. But his name was Chuck Muncy, and he had a heart attack. But I don't know what he might have been doing in his life. And there are some problems that he had from a personal standpoint in his career. And I know the NFL tried to step in with certain things with rehab and everything else, whether he really took advantage of those things, you know. I don't know. Some of it is our responsibility, too. There's a lot of guys that have needed help or that are going through some stuff, guys that I don't even know that they've hurried. I have a couple of my teammates right now. Abdul Salon has been struggling. Freeman McNeil has been struggling. Bruce Harper, that's why I'm going in. They're actually, it more so for them, not even me. Another Kenny Shroy. So it's you know, there's a long list of guys that don't know, guys that don't even have a name but play this game. And it's just a shame that I just want the NFL to acknowledge that the fact this might happen and it's attributed to playing this game. And I think you have to kind of look at it. Would you do this again if you could do it over? And I know with what I've gone through, there's no way I would have done it. You know, at least there's got to be a better way to try to practice or to prepare myself or not play when I was hurt or do the things that I did to my body. But the way I feel now and the things I went through, there's no way I would want to play this game.
If you could, you know, be one of the reasons why these policies changed, would that make it worth it for you, like, to go through all this? If you,
you know,
you
know, I've never
helping your
I would love to help anyone, anytime. I don't care if it's a young kid. I'm a teacher. I'm not looking for any accolades. Would it change anything if I was a part of something that made a change? But, you know, I would love to be a part of that, but I don't look at it as something that I'm looking for myself. This is for our individual. This is for the game. This is for people. This is the right thing to do. But no motivation on my part to getting a benefit from it. It's just doing the right thing and just making people aware. And that's why I talk. And a lot of times, as I had the problem when I was with the Jets, I was, you know, I said what was on my mind. I always had to hold out for contracts, but I just spoke my mind. And a lot of times the NFL doesn't like that. You're just telling the truth. Roger Goodell is a great friend of mine, and I have a lot of respect for him. And I thought it was going to be different, but I don't see any difference right now. And I hope that he tries to change that and really tries to do something, to, especially for the hair curl situation or with this concussion or some of the problems that these players are having. But from what I've seen so far, I just haven't seen it. And that's more disappointing than anything else when you know somebody as a from a friend standpoint. But when it comes to money and business, who you're working for, politics can be a brutal, brutal thing. But I have no motive for myself. It's just to bring awareness to people and the fans and hopefully make a change if that's a possibility.
It's been you know, very eye-opening for me talking to you. Just a really quick little background on myself. I'm 37 years old. So when we were, like, playing, I was growing up.
Yeah, making me feel old.
Yeah, sorry. And yeah. I had a starting lineup action figures. I had a Freeman McNeil, a Wesley Walker, a Ken O'Brien.
But if it wasn't I love for, Ken O'Brien. That's my favorite.
if it wasn't for you guys doing what you did for the Jets in that time period, you know, I may never even became a diehard football fan, and there's so many people in the state of New York who may not have as well. You know, I don't know if they look at it that way, but the things you've done for the NFL by playing has increased their profile. It seems silly for them not to to respect that and try to give back and help those who need it.
Well, I can only do my part. And mm-hmm. I just hope individuals, whether you work for the NFL, whether you're an owner, or whether you're a player, that you would do your part. And I think as players, when you're younger, you don't realize certain things until you get much older. That's just part of life and part of growing up. And you kind of learn. But it's your responsibility to try to help others. And when I got drafted, you know, and knowing what the situation really was from a business standpoint, I came back and told my players and the people that are going to come after me. And I know there were certain players, and I remember one of my teammates, hey, he's flashing all the $100 bills. It's about the money. Yes, it is about the money, but it's also being educated enough to do something with it and properly. And there's so many people or players who are going broke and not financing well. Mm-hmm. They have all these hanger-ons. You have finance people, lawyers, and they have no idea of what they're doing, and it's investments that you make on your behalf. They have their interests, and they don't care. And guys just have to be educated properly. And it's a shame that there are any programs out there, or whether it be the NFL and the Players Association, just to have a program out there to do right by the players and stuff. And as a youngster, you just don't know that, and you don't, you know. And I had a guy, for instance, who was like a father to me, my own attorney agent, mm-hmm. and didn't do the right thing by me, you know. And not that he was doing it purposely, and I was trying to do the right thing. But when I look back on things, was it for Wesley Walker's best interest and things that I really felt in my heart I should do on my own and using somebody else's expertise, thinking it was the right thing to do? And I should not have listened. I should have went with my heart what was best for Wes Walker. And I still have a problem with that, with family, with friends. And I'm always looking out for that other person or other people instead of taking the time out for myself. But that's just my personality. But I just wish there was a program out there where you know it was a fail-safe program and it's a guarantee. And in this game, there is no guarantees. And you only go around once, and a lot of people lose out because they made poor decisions. And in this game, you can't do that. But that's what life is all about. You live and learn, and you just try to get better at it and do the right things from here on out. And that's all I'm trying to do. And so I'm just trying to make people aware. And if there's any one thing with the NFL, the Players Association, the NFL owners, I just want them to tell the truth. That's it.
You know, and
let the public know what's the truth.
In my short time running this Jets website, I you know, was able to reach out to some people, and one of the gentlemen who work with you, his statement was that you are one of the truly nice guys in sports, and that he really considered you a friend. And I always see all the photos of you smiling. You just have such a like good attitude about things.
Yeah, I try.
Who instilled that in you?
Who's the one I would say that was my parents. You know, it comes from just my family, and I try to stay positive. And I did an interview with the Jets, and they were just mentioning Twitter. Are you on social media? I'd say, I don't know anything about Twitter. I don't even know Facebook. All I do is post smiles and post pictures. I don't even know how to tag people and all this stuff that they do. And I'm just an upbeat person. And, and some people actually get jealous that when you're out and you're, you know, I have a lot of people that either follow or they're into sports, and I'm so low key. I'm not into myself, and you know, I can't help it. People are, you know, enamored because you play ball or whatever it may be. But some people get jealous of that, you know, and I can't help it because people that really know me know I'm not caught up in being a former player. I'm just Wesley, and I like people. I don't care who you're. I'm no different than you. You know, I put my pants on the same way you put them on, you know. And I don't look at myself being better, but some people are caught up in personalities, and when they're on TV and they like who they are, and they need that accolades. And I'm so opposite from that. But I just, I have to say, my mom and my dad just brought me up really well. And it was just something that was just, I was just born that way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I just like having fun, you know? And then you got to stay happy and you got to stay positive. There's too much negative. And believe me, I have a lot of negative things going on in my life, but I can't dwell on it. I can only stay positive and try to move on from it.
Did I read correctly that you ran a 4.240 when you were playing?
Yep, I actually with the Jets is 4.3, but I think 4.35, and I was always on a consistent basis that way, you know. But in high school, I'd always, you know, ran track, and I had been clocked at 4.2, sometimes faster or whatever. But who knows who's on the clock or what your real times are, you know?
What do you think that would have been like with modern training? I mean, it's training's come a long way, and you know, since you played football, do you think you could hit 4?
If I could hit what?
If you could hit a 4.0 speed with your today's modern training and analytics and hooking people up to the machines, the scientific.
Yeah, well, hey, what the things they do today, I might have been even faster. I don't know. You know, you just don't know. And how legit times are, you know, mm-hmm. I know mine was legit. Mm-hmm. I know people took for granted. It maybe looked like I wasn't moving, but I was moving. And I had another guy, the only guy that I would say even intimidated, Johnny Lamb Jones. He had this gait, and man, he could run. And then there was another guy that played that kind of caught my eye, was Daryl Green, where I beat him on a corner pattern, and he recovered very well. And there's not a lot of people that could run as fast as me, and people took it for granted. But there's a lot of guys that play this game. You don't have to be fast. It certainly helps, but you have to know the game and you have to perform. And some people can't carry the ability they have onto the football field once they get there. And that's the difference. And I was able to do that from college and on to the pros. And a lot of guys can't do that on a consistent basis, and they can't do it right away or take some time. But you have to have somebody that's you can coach. You have to have a coach that knows what he's doing and could bring you to another level. And I just happen to have a guy that brought me to another level and made me better. And a lot of times you don't get that on a consistent basis. And out of 13 years playing in the National Football League, I can say my high school coach, and I had another coach, Dan Henney, who brought me to another level. And that's coaching, when you make somebody better. And all the coaches that I've had, you can do training and work on skills, but it's can they bring you to another level.
12th all-time receiving yards, I believe. Per reception.
Yeah, but it could have been a lot better if I'd stayed healthy. That was my problem, you know. There were times where I averaged 24, I think, one year, and then I was on my pace to break that. I was averaging 25.7, I think, and then I got hurt. So, and over the long term of my career, you know, you would love to average over 20-something yards per catch, you know, because I didn't get the ball a lot, so I had to do something with that. I used to be angry that Al Toon is catching 100 balls, and, you know, I could get – 5 or 10 yards a crack in a season and get 1,000 yards. But, you know, it's what you do with the football. And so there was always a competition there, and I didn't get the ball enough. And I hated just being known as a deep threat because I just wanted the football, you know. Because I'm a receiver, you catch the ball, and you do something with it. But I just took advantage of what I could do. If I didn't get hurt, hey, maybe I'd be in the Hall of Fame by now, you know. I played with guys like James Lofton was in my league at Stanford, and, you know, he couldn't even run with me, you know. But I look at, you know, you stay relatively healthy and you stay consistent. Andre Reed is another guy, you know. You just have to put up the numbers and be consistent. And I wasn't able to do that, and that's because of my injuries.
This is a silly question, but I got one for you. If you were stuck on a desert island and you had to pick another teammate of yours from the past to live with, who would it be?
Wow, that is an interesting question. Wow. Man, oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. I mean, you know, you play this game, and that's one of the things that you miss. You have a camaraderie and family, and then once you leave, sometimes you don't hear from people. I would give anything. If it had to be a guy, it would probably be, he was a 5-time All-Pro, he was a lineman, Marvin Powell. He used to live with me, he was my best man, And to this day, I do not know where that man is. And I would love to see him. He's never come in for any of the alumni situations.
Okay.
But he was a roommate, a teammate, a fine young man. We were union reps together. And a guy being a protector, he can protect me any day. He used to just put gas on his back. I used to love watching them battle in practice, you know. So if I had to pick one, maybe it would be him. But there's so many people that I can think about. Kenny O'Brien, Joe Glecko, Mark Gastineau, Freeman McNeil. I mean, I had a guy, Thomas Newton, who went to Cal Berkeley, who was a free agent, and we used to call him Nasty Newt. He was my roommate also. I would love to be with him. There's so many guys, you just have this bond. And you lose that bond and friendship when people move away. Some guys you never even see anymore. You hardly hear from them, you know. But there's just so many guys. Al Toon, Joe Dotanto. I can just go down with Richard Todd. You know, there's not any quarterback that I wouldn't love to have my backup quarterback. Pat Ryan. You know, I'd go to battle with any of those guys. I could just name on and on. I didn't even play with Joe Namath. Shoot, he could be on my island. But he's the nicest guy you want to meet. In fact, I've known him for years.
Did you see that Joe thinks he has the cure for concussion syndrome and all that stuff?
I heard about that, and it might be something to do some like neurofeedback type of stuff. That's why I'm going in Friday, but we'll see. He's in that chamber or something, so I didn't get a chance to talk to him a lot about it, but we did discuss it in our last visit. We do this thing for the Jets and the Giants. It's a big dinner every year, two dinners right back-to-back, and I get a chance. As a matter of fact, his daughter just got married, and that old Rick Buttle and his wife was at the wedding the other day. She was posting some pictures because we're good friends with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I notice in when you're posting photos with former teammates, I think if people didn't realize you were Wesley Walker, they'd probably think you were a fan because of just like the pure joy and a big smile on your face.
Well, but sometimes it's like that. But a lot of people know, you know, like there was a guy, I just posted a picture on Twitter today. His name was Wesley, and he had an 85, but he didn't expect me to be at the game. And it's like we all say, hey, you don't never know what you're going to get at a Jet game, you know. But and I've had people in the past that are just, or Wesley Walker fans, or just fans in general, but a lot of people don't know at the time because I don't say anything. I had when I first started teaching 25 years ago, most of my students didn't even know I played with the Jets. Their parents knew. But they'd come up to me after knowing me for years, Mr. Walker, I never knew you played for the Jets because, you know, that didn't define me as a person. Mm-hmm. And some athletes, I hate to say it, you're caught up and that's what they are. That defines them as a person, but that never defined me. You know, that's just part of what I did. But I'm just Wesley, the human being that loves people, loves kids, loves family, and loves everybody to be happy all the time.
Mm-hmm. That's great, Wesley. I think I went through everything I got here.
Okay.
This has been a great experience. I thank you. A few moments of your time. It's going to be something I remember for the rest of my life. So.
Well,
you
know. I appreciate that. I don't know why, but I appreciate that. And like I said, when you talk to me, I'm no different than you, and I'm glad to do it if I can help. I'm not prude. A guy sent me, a picture of some T-shirts the other day he's trying to promote or whatever it is, you know. Can I send you? Oh, no problem. It's just me. I'm just like that. I don't have any reason or any motive. And my girlfriend looked at me, I'm like, why are you sending? Why are you doing this? It's just, that's just who I am. You're trying to help somebody, you know, it's nothing wrong with that. Well, I put on a T-shirt and post a picture. How hard is that, you know? I don't know what they're going to get out of it, you know, but I'm flattered just as much as you, you know.
I got one last word. Last one for you, and if you don't want to answer, it's fine. But I was watching, you know, the NFL today, I think it was, I could be wrong on the show, but Terry Bradshaw has made a statement that's kind of stayed with me my whole life about Jets fans. It was, there's a lot of wonderful people from New York, and the rest of them are Jets fans. What's your opinion on the Jets fans?
I love them. I love them. And I just wish there was more. I mean, I would like to see him become like a Seattle, that 12th man. It means a lot. And I'll be honest with you, on a poster of one of my Ring of Honor things, or I forget what it was, and I'll be the first. Like, I played this game because of the fans. I get more respect now than I do when I was at the height of my career or accolades or whatever. But I truly just love the fans. You don't like it when they're booing you or cursing you out or whatever. But I truly love the fans, and I just love people, you know. And so there's nothing better when you have somebody that is excited about you or will watch you perform or wearing your jersey and or tell you these stories about when they were a kid and they want to be Wesley Walker or whomever may be with the Jets. And that makes you very proud. And so I have to respect that. And we play this game because they're supporting us every weekend. And the real Jet fans are going to be there through and through. And I've actually gone through a tunnel in New York City and some guy pulled me over, recognized me. I'm totally shocked. And he gave me a necklace. I remember with this little football thing on it because I gave him an autograph on the way out and he helped me get to the bridge. And I don't know this guy, but the people are special. And they should be attributed to it. And hopefully, the Jets can get back some swagger and winning and to get the fans behind them because there's nothing better when you win and the fans are behind you. But that's why I play the game. And I still respect them and I still love them, you know, and it makes me feel proud when I get the respect back.